Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 85 for April 14th, 2025. Fake Chrome, real threats inside SpyNote malware campaign. Dangling DNS, the hidden threat lurking in abandoned subdomains. Fortinet devices face stealthy exploitation despite patching. And Volt Typhoon unveiled, China's covert cyber campaign against U.S. infrastructure. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I am your host, Jim Guckin, back once again for another week of cybersecurity news stories that may have slipped under the radar that I think you need to pay attention to. Our first story is an interesting one because it's talking about attackers who create a fake website that looks like a Google Chrome install page on the Google Play Store. And they're using this to trick those users in the Google Play Store of downloading malicious application. And this malicious application happens to be the SpyNote malware. It's a powerful remote access Trojan designed specifically for the Android operating system, which is why it's on the Google Play Store. So, what can this SpyNote malware do? Well, it can access your SMS messages, your contacts, your call logs, your location data, any stored files you may have, can turn on and off your camera and microphone, manipulate calls, execute commands, implement key logging, whatever you type in, it can capture. By doing that, it captures your credentials and can intercept two-factor authentication code. So if I have your username and password and I want to get your two-factor authentication code and even make sure you don't see that two-factor authentication code, SpyNote's where it's at if you're on an Android device. And the devious thing with SpyNote is the way it's designed is it stays there unless you do a factory reset. It's the only way to get rid of this particular malware remote access Trojan. How many users are really going to do that? It could be a little bit of a pain in the butt. I mean, first of all, you have to know that it's there and then take your steps against it. So let's talk about the infrastructure for this malware. It uses malicious domains that were registered through NameSilo, Zixnet, to kind of host these things. So if you're looking at some weird domain you may see from your mobile devices, look if it's NameSilo or XINNet Technology Corporation. The hosting provider is primarily Lightnode and Vultr Holdings, V-U-L-T-R Holdings. Not saying everything hosted by these people are bad, but just little flag you should be paying attention to. The websites look the same regardless of which infrastructure hosts it. There's minimal variation between the malware configuration between those two domains, kind of hinting that this is probably the same threat actor. Now, speaking about threat actors, there are a couple different attributions right now. Some of these tactics are linked to Oil Rig, which is APT-34. There's also to Pat Bear, APTC-37, and Oil Alpha. It's not necessarily them, but it kind of shows you that these tactics are well established and being used across multiple different platforms. So just something for you to think about as you're looking through this, because it's an interesting way to see how these techniques are being used. The malware comes in both English and Chinese languages. The websites also are both in English and Chinese, both with the malware code. All this suggests by people who do the attribution that it may be a Chinese-based threat actor group. Not for sure, but leaning in that direction due to the fact that Chinese language is used. English is just kind of at this point your default language that everyone uses. So organizations with bring your own device policies are vulnerable to this, because my personal device, I can do whatever I want, and then I can connect it to corporate network. So hence the danger in that one. So we've talked about it. We've talked about what it can do. We talked about the infrastructure. What can you do to defend yourself? So one, as always, my number one, educate your employees. Conduct regular sessions, raise awareness about phishing techniques, and definitely in those trainings mention that you should not be installing things from unknown sources. Make sure you have a mobile device manager in place, that you're utilizing that, that you have security policies, and you're monitoring for any suspicious activity on those devices. Application whitelisting. If you have a MDM policy, you might be going to application whitelisting, saying here's the applications you can use, so that you make sure they don't install things that they shouldn't be doing. Obviously, because this is on your network and everything we talked about, make sure you're monitoring your network traffic to see if there's any weird stuff going about there. Because some of this is using the accessibility services on the device, limit those to only trusted applications. This is one of those things where after installs says, hey, we need extra permissions. And most people click yes. This is one of those things where you don't want to click yes on it. It gives it more access than it needs. And then regularly make sure you're inspecting your devices, doing some kind of regular security audit to make sure your devices are clean, are running in policy, and that you know what's on those, just to, you know, make sure you're safe. For our second story this week, I want to make this interesting because this is something that I have yet to be in an organization that has this totally under control. And it's called dangling DNS records. And what does that mean? It means you register a DNS record, a particular CNAME, and you point to a resource that no longer exists. Specifically around subdomains is usually where you see this. You register a helpdesk.yourcompany.com. And while that resource goes away, the IP address gets reused, and someone goes and takes advantage of that to point to malicious stuff. Now, that's an internal thing, but what happens if I do product A dot mycompany.com and product A points to a third-party hosting provider? I buy that address, and now I'm hosting it to make it look like you're hosting it. Genius way of doing it. So make sure that you're paying attention to all your DNS records, but any dangling ones, make sure you get rid of those. And this happens when you discontinue, you migrate, you change your SaaS subscription, all without updating the original DNS entry. You kind of let it phase out, or you roll it out over time, and then all of a sudden it's gone and you're not paying attention to it. And as I said, attackers are now looking for these orphan DNS records. They will find and register the URL or the IP address, gain control over that subdomain, then they serve malicious content. And if they're smart, they're gonna make it look like it's coming just from your organization. They can match your website and everything. And they can cause havoc on this. And it can be used in supply chains. Whereas a compromised subdomain can be used to distribute malware, or a configuration oversight can use to send code to maybe a software that you have, or a thing that you check in with, or an API that used to be on that thing. All very dangerous. So this is not just one of those theoretical ones, like I'm making it sound. Sentinel-1 researchers found over 1,250 instances of subdomain takeover, mostly related to deprovisioning cloud resources in the past year alone. In one investigation, approximately 150 deleted AWS S3 buckets received over 8 million requests for images, software updates, and VPN configurations, showing you that, yeah, why the first half of this, or first quarter of this story may have sounded like it was in theory, in reality, it's a big thing. So what should you do? And this should be kind of easy and obvious. Regularly make sure you audit your domain and your DNS. Make sure everything that should exist does exist, and everything that's no longer in use is ripped out of it. Use monitoring tools that can look for misconfigured DNS records and any kind of subdomain takeover. Make sure your decommissioning process is secure. Establish protocols that you're checking and someone signs off on all domains that are no longer used. Making sure that you use runtime security measures, runtime security solutions to capable of detecting and responding to unexpected behaviors. And finally, employee awareness training. Make sure they're not going to domains they shouldn't go to. I would say phishing this one. I'm going to add phishing. It's usually the first thing I do, but let's say phishing in this case. Make sure that you are training your employees on what your actual domains are and used for, so they're not clicking on stuff that shouldn't, because this would trick them, because it says mycompany.com, it must be legitimate, and it's not anymore.
For our third story this week,
something that every security professional tells you to do, which is patch often, patch frequently. And in this story, well, patching didn't solve the problem. So Fortinet is reporting that there is a target of vulnerabilities. Attackers are actually going after previously patched vulnerabilities even after they're patched, because the vulnerability still exists even after the patching. So this specifically goes around CVE 2022-4247-475, 2023-27997, and 2024-21762. And this is really devious, because if the attacker can get to you before you put any of these patches in place, they can create a link between the user and the root file in the Fortinet device and in the languages folder, meaning that if they can get access and you put these patches in place, that they still, it doesn't wipe out what they did. It just, they can't do it after that fact. But if they have a hook in there beforehand, then those patching is not going to kick them out. So they maintain persistence through this kind of patching, which is very dangerous, because you usually assume a patch fixes the problem, and it does fix the problem. It just doesn't fix anyone who is already in the system causing the problem. So this method kind of allows attackers still to access sensitive files, including the configuration, without detection, meaning that you've patched, you're like, whew, we're all done, everything's safe now, and here they go, they're still in your system, they're still able to change things and create bigger issues. So Fortinet, in doing this, has a mitigation step for you. They've released updates in FortiOS versions 7.6.2, 7.4.7, or 7.2.11, 7.0.17, and 6.4.16. All of these detect and remove that link they put into those SSL VPN language folders, meaning that if you do update to those versions, that if they are in your systems currently, they will get kicked out. Other things you can kind of do to make sure that you're protecting yourself against these kind of attacks, conduct regular system audits, inspect your devices for unauthorized links, implement continuous monitoring, make sure your security tools are always looking for any kind of undetected file system changes, restrict access, meaning only administrators can access FortiGate devices, to ensure strict authentication measures, and make sure you, in this case, you subscribe to the vendor in question here, but in this case, Fortinet. Make sure you're up to date on their news, so that when you see these kind of advisories come out, you can quickly pivot, put this new update in place, and make sure you're secure. Most vendors will do this for you. I see tons every month in my job that I get that tell me about threats that are still out there. And in this case, it said these were patched, but you want to wait for that notification coming out saying, yeah, even though you're patched, be aware, this is a thing. So our final story this week is kind of a heavy one, because China kind of was like, yeah, we might kind of know something about that Volt Typhoon campaign against U.S. infrastructure. And what does that mean? I know the attack, you can understand the attack, but what does it mean to kind of admit that you've done this? So, background. During a Geneva summit, Chinese representatives indirectly kind of admitted to orchestrating the Volt Typhoon cyber attacks, which targeted various U.S. Critical infrastructure sectors. This is communication, power, utilities, construction, government, a whole bunch of different sectors. The attacks were interpreted by U.S. officials as a strategic warning related to U.S. support for Taiwan, which has always been a kind of an issue between us and China. Highlighting why they might have done this kind of campaign. Volt Typhoon's operations said hit many sectors, including communication, manufacturing, maritime, transportation, energy, you know, the big sectors you don't want your threat actors in. And once again, they didn't do anything, but we found they were in our systems for quite some time. In fact, they were undetected in the U.S. electric grid for about 300 days back in 2023. So almost a whole year were they in the systems and not a single alarm had gone off. Meaning that if they wanted to, they could cause significant disruptions in the power grid, meaning lots of people without power, not really a great thing. Salt Typhoon also targeted major telecom firms, meaning communications, cell phones, landlines, all that stuff, just showing how big this attack, infiltration was. It wasn't an attack because they didn't bring anything down, but they were in our systems for quite some time. And, you know, it's a dangerous thing, and not many of us are in those sectors, but we are impacted directly and indirectly by those sectors. And, you know, usually at the end of this thing, I want to say, hey, here's how you defend against it. And I want to start out by saying that, you know, when you have these nation-state attackers, these APT groups that are backed by states, whether it's North Korea, China, Russia, any country like that, it's notoriously hard to defend against because they have the money and the resources to do multiple different attacks, find zero-day vulnerabilities that it's hard to. And if you're an infrastructure, you get this pain. This is your pain all day, every day. But I want to be able to somewhat tell you guys, hey, here's something you might be able to do in your organization. And I can give you some basics. Like, you know, if not already doing so, do zero trust architecture. Only let things access what they need to and nothing else. Segment your networks. Divide your networks and firewall off in between so only certain things can talk between those networks. If not already doing so, have someone do threat hunting on your network. May or may not have caused something of this case, but something definitely good to do. Make sure your employees are trained. They have best practice. They know of the emerging threats. They always do everything with a security conscious thought in their head. Will help mitigate some of this. Make sure there's not an industry I've been in yet that doesn't have a security group around it. In the financial services, I have FSISAC. When I worked for government, there was many government resources to pull from. Find your security industry partners, share information with them, get the information they share, act upon it. This kind of helps you the best you can to defend against something like this. As I said, in this case, it's not something easy you can defend against. It's not just phishing. I mean, these kind of attacks are very sophisticated, and so sophisticated that even professional, top of the industry people can fall for this. And that should show you, because infrastructure like this, you kind of have a government component to it, and they had people watching and didn't necessarily see this. So hard to defend yourself against, but you can do the best you can and hopefully set up enough roadblocks that by doing something, you hope you can catch something there. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Once again, don't forget, we are here almost every week. You can find more information about the stories I talked about at cybersecuritynewsbite.com. I have all my show notes with the notes that I read to kind of put this show together, as well as the stories in which I got the information from. So you don't necessarily always have to trust me on that aspect of it. And you can see what's being reported. If you want to learn more about me, you can always go to my website, jimguckin.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, news stories that you want me to talk about, you can always email me@jimguckin.com. Always happy to talk there. Find me on social media, LinkedIn, all that fun stuff. Make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbite.com.